For more than six decades now, more people have been moving out of Baltimore than moving into it. Over that time, numerous institutions have also left or disappeared. Large manufacturers, Fortune 500 companies, major events, but perhaps none is quite as famous as the overnight departure of the Baltimore Colts for Indianapolis in March 1984, without any prior public announcement from the franchise or from owner Bob Irsay. There were a couple reasons for the move.
Irsay was from Chicago, and despite his hollow promises to Baltimore, he had no allegiance to the city at all.
That's Mike Klingemann speaking, who's been writing for The Sun since 1973. In 1984, he was a Sports Enterprise reporter.
He'd been threatening to move the team for years, since he bought the team in 72, and every time city officials agreed to his demand, he'd just up the ante. Just days before the Colts left town, Irsay was offered a $15 million loan plus $6 million for the Owings Mills training complex the Colts used, plus guaranteed 43,000 ticket sales. But Indianapolis offered much the same, as well as a brand new 61,000-seat dome stadium, and it was close to Irsay's home. Remember, the Colts were at the time a very dysfunctional organization. They hadn't won a single game in 1982 when their final home game drew, I think it was less than 19,000 fans. People wore bags over their heads to games and threw toilet paper rolls onto the field in disgust.
But despite all that dysfunction, the Colts' sudden move is something locals still talk about. A memory that leaves a bad taste in their mouths, almost like a bad breakup. It wasn't just business. It was deeply personal.
Politicians were furious. Mayor William Donald Schaefer, who'd bent over backwards for months trying to meet the ever-changing demands of the Colts, called the move, quote, the final humiliation, and said it degrades a great city. John Steadman, then sports editor of the Baltimore News American, went a little further. He called it, quote, a despicable injustice, first torture, then rape. As for fans, I think more than one said that when he heard the news, he felt as though he'd just gotten a divorce.
Now that scar is getting itched again, as Baltimore braces for the potential loss of another sports institution, the nearly 150-year-old Preakness Stakes. This is Roughly Speaking Newsroom Edition, the flagship podcast of the Baltimore Sun, featuring stories from our city and our state that you can't get anywhere else. I'm Hallie Miller. Thanks for joining us. On today's episode, we discuss the question looming over this year's Preakness. Is it worth keeping in Baltimore, or are lawmakers, neighborhood associations, and others fighting a battle on its last legs? To help dissect this issue, we bring on Baltimore Sun reporters Doug Donovan and Jeff Barker, former Baltimore NAACP President Tessa Hill Aston, Maryland Public Policy Institute visiting fellow Marta Mossberg, and residents of the surrounding Pimlico area.
Save the Preakness! Save the Preakness!
Tensions between those who want to keep the second jewel of the Triple Crown at Baltimore's Pimlico Racecourse and those who think it'd be better off some 30 miles down the road at Laurel Park heated up over the past year.
Ain't no stopping us now. We're on the move.
The debate escalated in February after the Baltimore Sun reported that over the past 5 years, the Stronach Group, the company that owns both Pimlico and Laurel, has spent almost 90% of the money the state gives it for racetrack renovations on Laurel Park rather than Pimlico.
So a lot of people in the city and in that neighborhood are really frustrated about not just at Stronach, but at like city officials saying, why weren't you watching where they were spending their money?
That's Doug Donovan, an investigative reporter for the Baltimore Sun, who broke this story.
They're a business. They have a plan. They're executing it. You have the public interest that you have to look out for. And if they're not spending their money at Pimlico and you know that they should be, you know, why are we only hearing about that now? They really should have stepped in and said, we need that money up here. Because the writing was sort of on the falling down walls over at Pimlico that this thing could not just, you know, improve itself on its own. And there was money to do it. But
Stronach officials say the company's spending is divided fairly and based on the number of racing days held at each track. over 150 at Laurel, and just 12 at Pimlico. They've discussed moving the Preakness to Laurel before, but this year we saw the first big legislative push and planning effort down Annapolis. Stronach lobbied to have the state issue bonds to finance the plan to turn Laurel into a quote-unquote super track that could attract other big races and potentially even host the Preakness. I asked Doug to compare Laurel Park to Pimlico.
It's a nicer track. It definitely has a lot more amenities, and the plans they have for it, I think, are smart plans for business. They have space for sports betting, which eventually will come to Maryland. They have space for like video gaming, which is smart to appeal to a younger audience. If the Preakness were to move there, they would make it a smaller venue with higher ticket. Smaller audience with higher ticket prices, which also seems a reasonable business move given that the audience is smaller. So all of that makes sense from a business perspective. But, you know, losing Preakness because the Pimlico is in such bad shape is something that Baltimore officials don't want to see happen.
Stronach Group executive Tim Ritvo further explained the company's thinking to a Sun reporter a couple of years back, in 2017, during a visit to the Laurel Park facility.
And what we're looking at is, what does the Preakness look like 140 years from now, not what it looks like tomorrow or the next day. But everybody's knowing that the 1870 facility can't give the customer experience what they really should get on an event like this. Laurel is the day in and day out racing facility. We hope to have a brand new train station and parking garage, development all around the property where people can come and enjoy the races day and night.
So state law mandates that the Preakness must be held in Baltimore, barring some disaster or emergency. But what the law does not dictate is how much the company must invest at each track. The Maryland Stadium Authority in December proposed replacing Pimlico with a stylish and costly track that included other year-round amenities that could create long-term jobs. The plan costs about $424 million. An alternative plan floated by the city would allow for renovations at both Laurel and Pimlico, something of a middle ground, and had an estimated price tag of over $500 million. Just last week, advocates eager to keep Preakness in Baltimore said Pimlico could be renovated for less than all that, for about $200 million. Sun reporter Jeff Barker said this is the plan many hope will stick.
It turns out that a lot of people who want to keep the Preakness in Baltimore believe that it wouldn't require that much money. And so I spoke with people who are design experts of racetracks, and they said, well, you could have sort of more, not as fancy seating. You could have seating like you have at NASCAR events, which is basically just like steel bleacher structures, but then you bring in fancy seating, temporary luxury seating like they have at the Masters Golf Tournament or other golf tournaments. And that way you keep the price down and then maybe you can bring people to the table and figure out a way to fund it.
But some say that kind of money, whether it be $200 million or $400 to $500 million, is better spent elsewhere and just isn't a sensible use of funds. I called Marta Mossberg, a former Baltimore Sun columnist and current visiting fellow at the Maryland Public Policy Institute, who thinks the state's other needs should take precedence.
What is the actual number that it's contributing back into the community? It's ultimately not that much, and I think that if you get more people into the city, boost the population, have more businesses started in the city, that is what ultimately is going to save Baltimore, because there are so many other things that I thought the money could, where it could be better used. The Kerwin Commission just came out with this huge report saying we need to pour billions more into our public schools. And so why are we subsidizing horse racing?
I asked her what the most beneficial solution would be.
I don't think that it should just be left to lot. So it's the highest bidder and have the people who buy it, who have an interest in making money, come up with a plan for it. I think there's many things that could go in there.
But a coalition of Baltimore officials, neighborhood associations, and Park Heights residents says the city just can't afford to lose another anchor, especially one so lucrative that brings rare positive publicity to the area and with roots as historic. Tessa Hill Aston, former head of the Baltimore NAACP, who used to work in Baltimore City's housing department, said if Preakness left Baltimore, it would open the space up to a host of other challenges. I spoke to her at the Forest Park Senior Center, not far from where the racetrack is.
If that land becomes vacant in another year or so because they pull out, that's going to be a desert. And it's going to be an encampment, homeless people, drug addiction, you know, violence, anything that can happen. Wherever there's buildings and vacant stuff, people will go through those vents and go over there and try to have comfort for cold weather nights. Then that somebody will set a fire. I was on fire duty for 13 years, 24 hours a day, and it's been lots of buildings, and I won't name, in every community where either a vacant house has started on fire for those reasons, which affects the people next door, in commercial areas and in residential areas. So, no, we need that to develop and stay.
A recent University of Baltimore study completed for the Baltimore Development Corporation found that if Preakness were to stay in Baltimore, it could generate about $50 million per year. But where does that money go? I asked Doug.
So there's definitely an economic impact, obviously, of Preakness. But you haven't seen the direct benefit of that, I don't think. If there's been this big economic impact year after year, what the hell are they doing with all that money? I mean, they're certainly not putting it back into Pimlico, and they're not necessarily putting it into the neighborhoods around it either. So they can argue about economic impact and the benefits, but you know, somebody really needs to look hard at how the city spends the money in that area.
That hasn't stopped Baltimore leaders, including Tessa Hill Aston, from advocating for it.
Right now, we need it more than ever. We don't need to lose anything else that people come and is a drawing card. When thousands and thousands and thousands of people come to the racetrack, they're eating, they're staying at hotels, it's money that's coming in. Even though we feel that we don't get the money dropped down to where it needs to be, but we need the events and all the money coming in, and then you gotta step on people's fingers and say, give us what we deserve and let this money come to the community, come to recreation, come to education, because financially it's a benefit to everybody, even if they don't know it.
In March, four former Baltimore mayors, including Catherine Pugh, who has since resigned amid investigations into her business dealings, lobbied the state legislature's Black Caucus to keep Preakness in the city. Pugh was joined by former Mayor Stephanie Rawlings-Blake, Martin O'Malley, and Kurt Schmoak. The city then sued the owners of Pimlico Racecourse in hopes of blocking them from moving the Preakness or using state bonds to fund improvements at Laurel. I asked Jeff Barker how the Stronach Group responded to the lawsuit.
The lawsuit kind of changed the tone because prior to that, the dialogue between Stronach and the city hadn't been that harsh, but it started to turn more heated in the kind of the later days of Catherine Pugh's administration. She wrote a letter, and she basically accused them of violating the law by trying to move the Preakness.
This is Baltimore City, okay? You don't just get to just tear us apart.
Right,
you know,
right,
because we're trying to rebuild and build neighborhoods and communities that have been underinvested in. When you talk about things that create violence in our cities and communities, it's lack of investment. We're
right,
investing.
Right.
So we're not going to allow right. just a taking out of an investment that is important to the city that has a $33 million impact. Are you serious?
Yeah!
The point is what it should be.
What Stronach objected to in particular is that the lawsuit would mean that the city would seize control of Pimlico and the Preakness Stakes by condemnation. And Stronach says you can't, that's our private property and you can't take our property, and we will refuse to negotiate at all until the city drops the lawsuit. So what's interesting is now there's a new mayor, of course, and he hasn't said, the lawsuit is continuing, but he hasn't said specifically whether he is behind the lawsuit as much as his predecessor was.
Then in April, the Maryland Jockey Club announced that the northernmost section of seating at Pimlico would not be accessible for fans at the Preakness, a month before crowds would arrive for the race. It's about 7,000 seats. Doug said city officials took it as a slap in the face.
Well, Baltimore officials look at it as a retaliatory measure because it came after the defeat of the bill that Stronach Group wanted in Annapolis to support their plans for Laurel Park. So to turn around and then close 7,000 seats a month before the biggest racing day in the state, they definitely saw that as retaliation, sending a message. But that old grandstand, the northern part of Pimlico, that's like open-air seating. I sat there last year doing a Black Eyed Susan, and it's, you know, you feel the age. I'm there in Black Eyed Susan. I can't imagine sitting there in Preakness. I would be a little nervous.
That brings us to May, when the Maryland Jockey Club filed a motion to dismiss the city's lawsuit on the grounds that the state has exclusive ownership over horse racing. It's not exactly clear what will happen next. Negotiations have essentially stalled, as Stronach refuses to negotiate while a lawsuit is pending. And without Pugh leading the charge, it's possible that Baltimore's fight will simmer. But those on both sides of the issue seem to agree that no matter what happens, whether the Preakness stays in Baltimore or goes, the Pimlico site needs to serve the surrounding community. Some have suggested a grocery store or a concert venue, maybe even an apartment complex. Devorah Miller, a member of the area's Orthodox Jewish community who lives in Park Heights, north of Northern Parkway, said while she's never attended Preakness, she's concerned about what would happen to the community without the racetrack there.
What worries me is taking things away from this area and not replacing it with anything else. You know, I think it is a community event, and I think, again, you can't really belittle the fact that it does bring pride to the area. And so I worry that removing it from this area is kind of going to leave a gaping hole, literally and figuratively.
But just like this year's Triple Crown, it's possible that when all is said and done, whether that's next year, 10 years from now, or a generation away, there ultimately won't be a winner at all. And that wraps up this week's Newsroom Edition. Thanks for joining us. For more audio from the Baltimore Sun, head over to baltimoresun.com/roughlyspeaking and make sure to check us out every Friday. And while times change, the need for quality journalism doesn't. So please consider subscribing to the Baltimore Sun at baltimoresun.com/subscribe. For producer Steve Early, thanks again. And we'll see you back here next time.